recorded in Indianapolis, Indiana. Welcome to the Infamous Indie Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. This show features real-life stories of Indiana's most infamous horrors, Circle City serial killers, and crimes, both current and cold.
Crime creates ripple effect of pain throughout generations. It affects the victims, their families, investigators, and society as a whole. I sit down and interview the people directly involved with these cases and let them tell their story from their point of view. Hopefully, we can all learn something positive from their perspective. This week, don't drink the Kool-Aid. Maybe you've heard the term before, it's memorable for sure, and people say it to remind others not to be a follower, think for yourself, set your own path. But why Kool-Aid? Some people I've heard say it don't realize it's a reference of one of the worst events in history. In fact, it was the greatest single loss of American civilian life in a deliberate act ever at the time. 918 people died, including 276 children, in Jonestown, Guyana, a country on the northeast tip of South America, on November 18, 1978. The next bit of audio you're going to hear is from the night that these people were murdered. All of them were People's Temple members. They all died, and that's because Reverend Jim Jones, their leader, made them believe they needed to drink the suicide concoction in an act of revolution. It was made up of potassium cyanide, diazepam, and chlorohydrate, as well as Flavor-Aid, a grape-flavored beverage similar to Kool-Aid. Jim Jones was known to record a lot of his speeches and church teachings, but this piece of history is much, much darker. Cyanide death is extremely traumatic, and in the background you can hear hundreds of people who were experiencing the effects, including foaming at the mouth and severe convulsions. At the time, Jones told his members that the CIA was coming to kill them and their children and everyone living in the village. Earlier that day, Jones gave the orders to have visiting California Representative Leo Ryan killed after visiting the compound. Temple members are begging for their life as Jones's doctors and nurses mix that cyanide into the metal vat. Jones is heard telling them to drink it quickly. You will also hear Jones argue with Temple members who actively resisted his decision for the whole congregation to die. I do want to warn you, this audio is very disturbing.
But people in San Francisco will not be idle over this. They'll not take our death in vain, you know. Yes, you see.
Is it too late for Russia?
Here's why it's too late for Russia. They killed. They started to kill. That's why it makes it too late for Russia. Otherwise, I'd said, Russia, you bet your life. But it's too late. I can't control these people. They're out there. They've gone with their guns, and it's too late. And once we kill anybody, at least that's the way I've always put my lot with you. If one of my people do something, it's me.
Well, I said let's make an airlift to Russia. That's what I say. I don't think nothing is impossible.
Well, how are we going to
believe it?
How are you going to airlift to Russia?
Well, I thought they said if we got in an emergency, they gave you a code to let them know.
No, they didn't. They gave us the code that they'd let us know of an issue, not us create an issue for them. They said if they saw the country coming down, they'd give us the code. They give us a code. You can check on there and see if it's on the code. You can check with Russia to see if they'll take us in immediately, otherwise we die. I don't know what else you say to these people. But to me, death is not a fearful thing. It's living this treachery. Christine, it's not worth living like this. Not worth living like this.
I think that there were too few who left for 1,200 people to give them their lives for those people that left.
You know how many left?
20 odd. That's a small
20 odd. 20 odd.
Compared to what's here.
20 odd. But what's going to happen when they don't leave? I hope that they could leave, but what's going to happen when they don't leave?
Well,
to Russia. You think Russia's going to want? No, not going to. We're not. You think Russia's going to want us with all this stigma? We had some value, but now we don't have any value.
Well, I don't see it like that. I mean, I feel like that. As long as there's life, there's hope. That's my faith.
Well, everybody dies. Someplace that hope runs out because everybody dies. I haven't seen anybody yet didn't die. And I like to choose my own kind of death for a change. I'm tired of being tormented to hell. That's what I'm tired of. Tired of it. 1,200 people's lives in my hands, and I certainly don't want your life in my hand. But I'm going to tell you, Christine, without me, life has no meaning. I'm the best friend you'll ever have. Once I have to pay, I'm standing with you, Jara. I'm standing with those people. I will take your call. We will put it to the Russians, and I can tell you the answer now because I'm a prophet. Call the Russians and tell them to see if they'll take us.
Not that I'm afraid to die.
I don't think
no
you
means.
Are. I don't think you are.
But I look at our babies, and I think they deserve to live.
I agree.
You know?
But also they deserve, what's more, they deserve peace.
We all came here for peace.
And have we had it?
No.
I tried to give it to you. I've laid down my life practically. I've practically died every day to give you peace. And you still not had any peace. You look better than I've seen you in a long while. But it's still not the kind of peace that I wanted to give you. So, a person's a fool that continues to say that you're a winner when you're losing.
I know that. But I still think as an individual, I have a right to...
You do, and I'm listening.
...what I think, what I feel. And I think we all have a right to our own destiny as individuals.
Right.
And I think I have a right to choose mine, and everybody else has a right to choose theirs.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. I'm not criticizing.
You're only standing here because he was here in the first place. So I don't know what you're talking about, having an individual life. Your life has been extended to the day that you're standing there because of him.
Well, it's back there. She has as much right to speak to anybody else, too. I don't prefer one above another. I don't prefer him above you, Jara. I can't do that. I can't separate myself from your actions or his actions. If you'd done something wrong, I'd stand with you. If they wanted to come and get you, they'd have to take me.
And we're all ready to go. If you tell us we have to give our lives now, we're ready. I'm pretty sure all the rest of the brothers are with me.
For months I've tried to keep this thing from happening, but I now see it's the will of sovereign being that this happened to us. That we lay down our lives in protest against what's being done. That we lay down our lives to protest in what's being done. They won't accept us. And I don't think we should sit here and take any more time for our children to be endangered, because if they come after our children and we give them our children, then our children will suffer forever. It's easy.
So we might as well end it now, because I don't see...
Chalky, the congressman has been murdered.
What a legacy. But the Red Brigade's the only ones that ever made any sense anyway. They invaded our privacy. They came into our home. They followed us 6,000 miles away. The Red Brigade showed them justice. The congressman's dead. Please get us some medication. It's simple. There's no convulsions with it. It's just simple. Just please get it. Before it's too late, the GDF will be here. I tell you, get moving. Don't be afraid to die. If these people land out here, they'll torture some of our children here. They'll torture our people. They'll torture our seniors. We cannot have this. Are you going to separate yourself from whoever shot the congressman? I don't know who shot him.
With panic and scare tactics, Jones was telling everyone those mercenaries from the CIA or Guyanese soldiers would soon emerge from the jungle and slaughter them all. But in reality, loyalists with crossbows and firearms formed a circle around the area by the pavilion where the poison was being injected into children's mouths with plastic syringes and distributed to the adults in paper cups. The children were poisoned first. This is often suggested to be the reason why so many adults continued towards their deaths with little to no resistance. A lot of them were too sad to go on.
There's nothing to worry about. Everybody keep calm and try and keep your children calm. And the older children can help love the little children and reassure them. They aren't crying from pain. It's just a little bitter tasting, but they're not crying out of any pain.
When you step, there's no other thing you can do but step that way. It's the only way to step. The choice is not ours now. It's out of our hands.
If you have a body that's been crippled, suddenly you have the kind of body that you want to have.
A little rest.
It feels good. You've never felt so good, family, I tell you. You've never felt so good is how that feels.
Okay.
Please, for God's sakes, let's get on with it. We've lived as no other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they'll pay for this. They brought this upon us. And they'll pay for that. I leave that destiny to them. Who wants to go with their child has a right to go with their child. I think it's humane. No more, no more, no more. We're trying. If everybody will relax, the best thing you do to relax, then you will have no problem. You'll have no problem with the thing if you just relax. To us, we had nothing we could do. For 20 years laying in some old rotten nursing home. Respect, die with a degree of dignity. Lay down your life with dignity. Don't lay down with tears and agony. It's nothing to death. It's like Max said, it's just stepping over into another plane. Don't be this way. Stop this hysterics. This is not the way for people who are socialists or communists to die. No way for us to die. We must die with some dignity. Soon we'll have no choice. Now we have some choice.
Must be insane.
The children, it's just something to put you to rest. Oh, God. Mother, 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 please. Mother, please, 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 don't. Don't do this. Don't do this. Lay down your life with your child, but don't do this. Free at last. Peace.
The families were then escorted away from the pavilion, away from other people who hadn't taken their dose yet. This was to avoid anybody kind of resisting the death. The poison was very effective, in fact causing death in about 5 minutes to anyone who drank it. Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Children, it will not hurt if you'll be quiet. because they don't want to live in this kind of a world. So be patient, be patient. Death is, I tell you, I don't care how many screams you hear, I don't care how many anguished cries, death is a million times preferable to 10 more days of this life. If you knew what was ahead of you, if you knew what was ahead of you, you'd be glad to be stepping over tonight. Death is common to people. And the Eskimos, they take death in their stride. Let's be dignified. If you quit telling them they're dying, if you adults would stop some of this nonsense, adults, I call on you to stop this nonsense. I call on you to quit exciting your children when all they're doing is going to quiet rest. I call on you to stop this now, if you have any respect at all. Are we black, proud, and socialist, or what are we? Now stop this nonsense. Don't carry this on anymore. You're exciting your children. All over, and it's good. No sorrow that it's all over. I'm glad it's over. Hurry, hurry, my children, hurry. All I say, let's not fall into the hands of the enemy. Hurry, my children. Hurry. The seniors out here that I'm concerned about, hurry. I don't want to leave my seniors to this mess. Quickly. Sisters, good knowing you. No more pain, Al. No more pain, I said, Al. No more pain. Jim Cobb is laying on the airfield dead at this moment. Remember, Oliver woman said she'd come over and kill me if her sons wouldn't stop her. These are people, the peddlers of hate. All we're doing is laying down our life. We're not letting them take our life. We're laying down our life. We're taking their lives. We just want peace. We've set an example for others. We've set 1,000 people who say we don't like the way the world is. Please stop. Take our life from us. We laid it down. We got tired. We didn't commit suicide. We committed an act of revolutionary suicide protesting the conditions of an inhumane world.
As you can hear, that is one of the most chilling pieces of audio ever recorded, and it's where we get the saying, don't drink the Kool-Aid. We need to remember, or at least not totally forget this moment in history, and by talking about it, we can try to learn why this happened, looking back at the tragedy more than 40 years later. The information is getting lost to time, and that's why this episode is very special and close to my heart. I have two interviews with people who lived it. People who were there, people connected to it like no other. The first man you'll hear from is a former member of Jim Jones's First Church in Indianapolis in the 1950s. His name is Eugene Cordell. He's a former congregant, and his mother and sister and her children were killed that night in Jonestown. We also talked to his daughter Donna during the interview. The second interviewee for this episode was not only in Guyana at the time of the murder-suicide, but he was the communications officer, the public information officer, and a full true believer for the church. He is and was Jim Jones' adopted son, Jim Jones Jr. His story is incredibly interesting, and he was the first African-American child to ever be adopted from the state of Indiana. That was when Jim Jones Jr. was only 10 weeks old. Now, you'll have to stay tuned for part two, because part one is with Eugene Cordell, and part two will be with Jim Jones Jr., but all this information is very important. Jim Jones Sr. and Marceline Jones wanted to create what was called a rainbow family. The couple adopted three children of Korean-American ancestry, Lou, Stephanie, and Suzanne Jones in 1954, and then they adopted Agnes Jones, who was partially Native American. 2 years later, in 1961, they adopted Jimmy Jones Jr. The couple then adopted another son who was white named Tim. Tim Jones' birth mother was a member of the People's Temple Church and was originally named Timothy Glenn Tupper. I did talk with Jim Jones Jr. via Skype from California, where he still lives. Near where the People's Temple Church gained so much notoriety. By the way, when Eugene talks about Jimmy, he's referring to Jim Jones Sr., not Jim Jones Jr., who is often called Jimmy as well. Eugene talks about what it was like to be in the church at the time in the 1950s. Many people wonder how could Jones's followers be so naive to follow a man from Indiana all the way to the jungles of South America just to die for a cause. Well, Eugene tries to answer that for us.
I'm gonna put this on you too while I'm here.
Okay.
Might as well. I got two for you here.
Two mics.
Yeah, two mics.
As long as you don't get crosstalk. I'm an electronic technician.
I sat in Gene's living room for this one, on the east side of Indy, in a home that they've lived in for 60 years. Gene's two daughters sat on the couch next to him, and his son listened nearby from the living room. Gene's children also went to the People's Temple Church when Jones was the pastor, and they have very strong memories.
Well, did you work on his car?
Yeah, I worked on Jim's car. He had a 53 Chrysler. And wouldn't you know it, he bought one of the lemons.
And you had to work on it?
Yeah, I had to work on a 53 Chrysler, put a new carburetor on it. And I went down and bought the new carburetor and put it on. And gas started pouring everywhere. Come back to find out it didn't have some plugs put in it. It was supposed to have been put in when it was reassembled. I became acquainted with Jimmy in 1955.
Do you remember the first time you met him, Gene?
Yeah, we went to the church at 15th in New Jersey. But in 1957, Jimmy said it didn't make any difference where he bought the Sunday school literature from. Well, I told him it did to me, and I said, "Goodbye, Jimmy." And Easter Sunday of 57, we attended Calvary Tabernacle. We've been there ever since.
So you didn't like it where he stood?
No, I didn't like his ideas. Yeah, I just remember Jimmy, and then him taking the Bible and throwing it on the floor and stomping on it and telling people that the Bible is all wrong.
In church?
It's the Word of God.
In church? He did that in church?
He did that in church at 10th and Delaware.
Then he
said the Bible wasn't wrong, all wrong. Don't follow the Bible, follow me. I follow no man except Jesus Christ.
Jones was known to use techniques he learned from another cult-like pastor, Father Divine from Philadelphia.
He went to 1957. In February, he went to Philadelphia to see a guy named Father Divine. And when Jimmy come back, Jimmy had changed ideas.
So he was a different preacher.
He was a different. He was a different man. From what I met in 1955 at People's Temple.
Father Divine was sort of a mentor to Jones. He usually asked his congregation to refer to him as Father, as Jones did. He also talked about socialism a lot, something Jones found very interesting. Some followers came to the People's Temple Church in Indy for the politics, but Jim Jones always put on a show. Gene's daughter, Donna, remembers that.
When I was like 3 years old, I had to be about three, maybe four, and he would be preaching. He'd come stomping up into the congregation of all of us people, and he would be so red, like my father's already mentioned, that he would get as red as a beet. I mean, redder than a beet. And sweating profusely. And
he was
so
Indian.
So loud. I mean, it was like he was almost deafening. Scary. Just very scary for a child.
He's very demanding.
Demanding, that's a good word, yeah. It scared me. I was like, you know, I wanted to crawl underneath the seat in the church. I was terrified.
At that time, Jim Jones was doing a lot of work for civil rights communities. He pissed a lot of people off by integrating the People's Temple Church, allowing black church members to join for the first time in history. He even once refused to get treated at a local hospital until the hospital was segregated, and it worked. He would use his political influence with members of the city, the mayor, the governor, all to request changes for the African-American community in Indianapolis. Jim Jones almost integrated the entire city by himself. He built the reputation by accomplishing a lot of things, and if Jim Jones had been killed somewhere towards the end of the 1950s, he would have been remembered today as one of the great leaders in the civil rights movement, and he would have earned that reputation. In the church, he blended the gospel music of black churches and the preachings of his choosing and talk about socialism as well. He would perform so-called miracles, saving people during his sermons. Stories included being healed of cancer masses they would throw up in the middle of church and then hold up for everyone to see. Later, he would even help people walk. Allegedly. It was later discovered it was all trickery, including the cancerous masses. Gene's wife learned about that firsthand.
Yeah, he was fooling people. He was telling people they were healed. And my wife had went to the restroom, and she seen the chicken livers and stuff in there. And she was raised on a farm, and she knew all about the chickens. She was the chicken girl. If you look at the kitchen in there, you'll see the decor around the top of the kitchen is farm decor.
Sure, sure. So she knew what livers looked like.
She knew what it looked like. So it wasn't fooling her to what they had in there. And he was telling people they coughed that up when they didn't.
So it wasn't just Jimmy.
So we caught Jimmy and lying.
And he told her to get out.
Yeah, we was told that he didn't want anything to do with us.
Another tactic for control, Jones was a master manipulator. He would always learn everything he could about his followers and then use that information to blackmail and control them. Gene's adopted mother, Edith Cordell, was one of Jones's victims.
He followed the background of everybody. He investigated everybody. He knew every family. He knew their relatives.
Members of the Jones Church believed fully in their father. They believed he was a savior, he was God, and that his movement was the solution to all problems in society. He had so much loyalty, he basically stole from his own people. Jones was known to ask members for their property or money. Literally, people would sign their possessions over to him. That's what happened to Edith Cordell, Gene's mother. Gene tells me she was technically his aunt, so like an adopted mother to Gene. Gene still called her mother, and Gene's kids called her grandma. But one day, Edith Cordell was not herself.
He wanted to get Edith, though. He wanted the property at 2048 North Keystone. He wanted that house. So that house is still standing today off of the interstate, off I-70.
Gene recalls how one event opened his eyes and how far gone his adopted mother, Edith, was.
Yeah, they came to the house. They were in the kitchen. And Jimmy really got mad at me. I had Jimmy arrested for giving Edith what they called a flu shot. And her arm was all black and blue, and she was a different personality. She was not the same Edith. Yeah, it was drugs.
It was.
It was drugs.
It changed
the personality of the person. His wife was a registered nurse. She was supposed to give drugs, but only under a doctor's orders. And that's what they told him.
They just
slapped his hands and let him go. Yeah, I had him arrested. They just slapped his hands and let him go. And he was so mad that night. There on Keystone, I stopped in to see Edith, and my wife and I were there, and we called our pastor, and our pastor said, well, put Jimmy on the phone, tell him I want to talk to him, and then you two get out of there. So my wife and I immediately left and told Jimmy to get on the phone and talk to Brother Urshan.
I asked Gene and his daughter Donna what made people want to follow Jim Jones.
But I think the people were looking for an easier life. A lot of them were poor.
They might not have been stupid.
Yeah, he preyed on the poor.
Yeah.
And the less fortunate people.
He told Edith, if you give me your house, I'll provide for you the rest of your life.
In July 1965, Jones led 140 members, half of whom were black, to Redwood Valley, California, and officially opened the church there. For Gene and his family, it was a tragic day they will never forget.
I went over to the house the day Edith was packing up the car to go to California. I went over to get the ladder out of the garage. I had the ladder on top of my car. And Edith come out with her clothes and got in the car and didn't even say goodbye to me. And she raised me from a baby.
He's been hurt by that.
We all called her Dee Dee.
He's still hurt.
She had a nickname of Dee Dee, Aunt Edith.
She didn't tell any of us goodbye.
She didn't tell nobody goodbye. She just walked out and left.
After being grandma to all of us. And
I really feel like she was drugged.
Yeah.
She wasn't in her right mind.
Yeah.
Very sad.
So, yeah, it had a ripple effect on the family.
So I'm just saying that I'm glad I had the parents I had that raised me, because they knew the difference and they got us out of there. Otherwise, we would have been a statistic like the rest of the 900 plus people that was killed over there.
It was a cult. Beware cults. That's my word today. Beware the cult.
Now, this is only the beginning for Jones and his manipulations. The Cordell family was only one of the families he destroyed in the process. I want you to stay tuned for part two. I do want to thank Eugene and his family for letting me into their home to tell their side of this story. Obviously, very interesting. They have great memories in terms of being able to remember details and events and exactly how it happened. I was excited to be able to find someone who actually experienced what it was like to go to church where Jim Jones was the pastor. And as I was leaving Eugene's house and saying goodbye to his family, he wanted to make sure that everyone understood that one man is never the answer. That Jesus Christ is the answer. You want to stay tuned for part two coming up soon. I'll have that interview with Jim Jones Jr. It's very interesting, and I'm excited to bring it to you. But until then, as I always say, stay safe.